8. We are now on number 9. It's past 2:15.
Lorna has her hand up.
Yeah, I just want to say something really quick, not to stop us from moving on, but if we wanted to do something useful over here where I live, which is where Barbara lives, where the whales are, it would be to get signage up at marinas about what the actual restrictions are. That would, to me, have way more bang for the buck than almost anything else. People don't know the whale restrictions when they go out in their boats, so...
They're up at most all the marinas and resorts and so on in the San Juans. I can tell you that. If you don't have them, we'll have to figure out a way to get them to you, Lorna.
Okay.
Yeah. Dr. Watson has her hand up. Julie.
I just wanted to mention on that, we are working with the recreational boaters and we're going to continue partnering with them. We're also part of a transboundary Be Whale Wise partnership that works on distributing all those signs and pamphlets and doing on the water boater education. So this is a priority for the state and we're excited to keep working on it.
Thanks, Julie. You have a good Friday. I think you're done now. All right, Nate. Okay, thank you all. Moving on to number 9, the Lower Columbia Sturgeon Population Status and Management Annual Review Briefing. This is also has public comment. Nikki, do we have anybody signed up yet?
We do have a few, yes.
Okay. Laura, welcome.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. I will try to share my screen.
Just to let you know, Laura, there's a tiny bit of feedback coming from your end.
Okay. I'm not sure what to do about that.
Just speak up. It'll be fine.
Okay. So hopefully you're looking at my presentation now.
Yeah, looks good.
Cool. Thank you very much, everyone. My name is Laura Hieronymus, and I'm the Columbia River Sturgeon, Smelt, and Lamprey Unit Lead. And today I'll be presenting the annual review on the Lower Columbia River Sturgeon stock status. So the purpose of this is just to review that stock status and fisheries for Lower Columbia Sturgeon. This is something that's requested in that commission policy, which I included in your handout document today. So just briefly, we'll cover what that policy guidance is, touch on the 2020 fisheries, what happened, and go into what the current stock status is for the population, some predation concerns. This will hopefully address some of the questions earlier about pinniped predation. And then we'll touch on what our plans are for 2021 in regards to a fishery. And just to clarify, when I'm talking about the Lower Columbia sturgeon population, I'm specifically referring to those fish found in the Columbia River downstream of Bonneville Dam. There are sturgeon populations upstream of Bonneville. However, the dams throughout the Columbia River have fragmented the population. And so sturgeon don't pass these dams with high frequency. So we manage each of those reservoirs as separate populations. Historically though, they would all be one genetic population. And then the Lower Columbia population does have access to the ocean. They are an anadromous species. So you can also find fish that are sourced from the Columbia in some of the near shore marine areas on the Washington and Oregon coast. Some other big populations along the coast would be from the Fraser River in BC or from the San Francisco Estuary in California. And so some of these fish can mix along the coast there. So the current policy guidance was recently updated and adopted January 25th, 2019. And this is a very quick overview here, but generally that guidance is to provide consistent management guidelines to promote a healthy population and provide sustainable fisheries. I have noted a couple of conservation and fishery management objectives I thought were somewhat key to this population. For conservation, increasing the abundance of our spawning population, managing with a precautionary approach, and then monitoring that population within the available resources. So in terms of monitoring the population, we do a lot of that in conjunction with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, one of the benefits of being on joint state waters for that primary source of the population. our fishery management objectives to quantify impacts of fisheries on sturgeon abundance, consider projected recruitment, mortality sources, and monitoring and managing those fisheries. And there is some statement, there is a statement in that policy regarding fisheries outside of the Columbia, and that they should be held to the same policy guidance here as in the Columbia, that we need to be able to monitor and manage that fishery. And then finally, I added in here, it's at the end of the policy that the commission has delegated authority to the director to develop and negotiate Lower Columbia sturgeon management accords with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife that are consistent with these policies and objectives. So that's why this is a briefing and not a decision package. So in recent years, we actually had closed the Lower Columbia sturgeon population harvest from 2014 through 2016. This was due to declines in the harvestable legal population. For reference, some of our harvest rates prior to that closure in the early, maybe 2005 to 2010 range, were around 20 to 30% harvest rates. We dropped that to about 15 to 10% in the years just leading up to the closure. And then in 2017, WDFW worked with ODFW to develop some very limited sturgeon harvest fisheries. These are now operating at about a 3 to 5% harvest rate. So we have dramatically reduced that harvest rate in order to help rebuild and recover that population while still providing some opportunity to maintain connection with that resource. So what did that look like for 2020? We used about a 3.5 to 4% harvest rate, and that gave us a total catch guideline of 5,720 fish. Commission policy has us split that guideline 20% to commercial fisheries and 80% to sport fisheries. So you can see that breakdown here. Each of those guidelines then get further broken up. So for our commercial fisheries, the preseason expectations were about a 50-50 sharing between main stem and select area fisheries. So the map on the left is showing the full Columbia there, kind of that red area, zones 3 through 5 is what was open for our main stem fisheries in 2020. And then the map on the right is kind of the zoomed in area of the estuary. And so these red highlighted areas show the select area fisheries. And you can see most of those are on the Oregon side of the river, just kind of based on geography there. So in the select area fisheries, we opened harvest in winter, spring, and summer for sturgeon. And a total of 547 fish were brought to market from select area fisheries, which was about 48% of the total commercial guideline. Main stem fisheries opened in early fall and late fall for sturgeon harvest and caught 567 fish, which was about 50% of the commercial guideline. So very close, that preseason expectation of 50-50. I think we got about as close as we could to that. So total harvest for commercial fishing, 1,114 fish brought to market, which was about 98% of that commercial guideline. So then the sport fishing areas, they are also broken up into three areas, and I kind of just use these little bubbles to show you where those areas are. So the first area, the Columbia River estuary, gets approximately 60% of the sport guideline. That's that was 2,750 fish in 2020. And that goes from the buoy 10 marker up to the Wana power lines, which is about halfway through section 9 on this map. The next area upstream, so the total area upstream from Wana, it gets about 40% of the guideline. And most of that goes to the Wana to Bonneville stretch on the main stem Columbia. This past 2 years, we've also opened the Cowlitz River on the Washington side as a part of that opener. So that guideline was 1,140 fish in 2020. And then the third area is in Oregon waters, and that's the Willamette River. That it gets a small portion of the quota, and that was allocated at 690 fish in 2020. So these fisheries here's just the catch guidelines for or what was actually caught in each of these areas. In the estuary, we didn't actually end up setting a retention fishery in 2020. Typically that would happen, that would start around Mother's Day, but with the state's closure on with coronavirus, that fishery just did not occur. And I have more information if you guys are interested in that. But we do think that there were about 832 angler trips for catch and release fishing documented during some of the other fisheries that occurred when we were monitoring. So those catch and release monitoring trips are only calculated when we have fisheries open elsewhere that we're also monitoring, if that makes sense. In the Wanet to Bonneville area, we opened for 5 days in the fall from September 12th to October 3rd. We had a little over 9,000 angler trips, and they harvested 857 fish, which was about 75% of the guideline for that particular area. Towards the end, just the catch rates and total angler effort kind of petered out, and so we decided to close that due to lack of interest going later into October. And then in the Willamette, for the first time since 2013, Oregon did open a fishery. They opened for 2 days in June and had a little over 5,000 angler trips for 167 fish harvested, which was 24% of the Willamette's guideline. And I do mention the Willamette because it is part of this population stuff that is, but that is Oregon waters. So total harvest was a little over 1,000 fish in sport fisheries, which is 22% of the total 2020 sport guideline for all three areas. If you consider just the Columbia River, which is open to Washington anglers, that also added up to 22% of that harvest guideline. In total, between retention and catch and release fisheries, we had a little over 17,000 trips for sturgeon fishing. So if there's any other questions there on the harvest before I move forward, I can address them now. Okay. So I was asked to include some information on white sturgeon life cycle. I'll cover it briefly, but generally just since I'm not sure how much all of our commissioners are kind of aware of sturgeon, they are a long-lived species. And so what I'm showing here is kind of our juvenile, sub-adult to adult period. It takes a sturgeon about in the Columbia around 20 to 30 years to reach maturity to spawn. And once they do, they're putting out millions of these eggs. So they're broadcast spawners. They're not building nests or anything. They're looking for clean, cobbly substrate with high flow velocity. And these eggs are adhesive and they need just well oxygenated clean water in order to hatch. Those eggs actually hatch within 2 weeks, give or take a few days, depending on water temperature. And these yolk sac fry emerge. Those yolk sac fry also spend about 2 weeks, give or take, depending on temperature, to transition to first feeding adults, or sorry, first feeding larvae. And then they eventually grow into what we consider our age zero or young of year sturgeon. And so by the fall, we're able to sample these young of year sturgeon, and they look pretty much like an adult sturgeon at that point, but just little. So if you're looking at this graph or this figure, where we're harvesting is generally these kind of sub-adult juvenile type size fish. Once they do reach maturity, they can spawn multiple times over the course of their life. So for females, it's around every 5 years or so. For males, it could be every 1 to 3 years. And when we're considering sanctuary areas and some of our sport fishing regulations that we've recently passed, is to protect that spawning life stage where these fish are the most sensitive and where we see more bottlenecks in the population. And that's just generally around recruitment. So these sturgeon with millions of eggs in them that become overly stressed out can actually resorb their eggs, and that high lipid intake in a very short period can actually kill them if it happens very quickly. So that was just kind of a brief overview here. A little bit more about this. So there are three key age classes that we track for comparison through time. Our juvenile portion of the population, which is what we consider the 21 to 37 inch fish. These are fish large enough to be caught on our set lines, but small enough that they're not in our legal size group. These fish are probably a couple years old. When they first enter this juvenile stage, they're not our young of year. And generally what we wanna see is a large portion of the population made up of juvenile sturgeon. And so this graph is actually showing that this is not a huge amount in the current 2020 distribution. The legal size range, this 38 to 54 inches, this is the pre-2014 harvestable legal size. We continue to use this size as a metric, just so when we're comparing through time, we're comparing apples to apples, and we can make these comparisons on what we're harvesting and how that portion of the population is growing. The actual current legal slot for harvest is 44 to 50 inches. This was another thing taken into account to allow more of these fish to escape the fishery and try and push more fish towards the adult portion or the adult size class. And as you can see, we do have kind of a little bump of fish that are starting to show up past that legal harvestable slot and are moving their way towards the adult size. So these are pretty slow growing fish. It might take them a decade or so to get there, but we are moving more fish towards that adult age class. And so what we call adults are anything over 66 inches or so. And these are where we expect a majority of fish by the time they reach this size to be mature spawning fish. Some fish may mature a little earlier and some may mature a little later, but a majority of fish by 66 inches are mature spawning adults. So kind of a way to think about this is some of our goals have been to increase this adult portion of the population. That's our principal balance. We want those in there because they live a long time, it can spawn multiple times. And then our juveniles to legal size, that's our interest. We can harvest off the interest, we can live off the interest, but we wanna keep building up that principal balance. It's at least how I like to think about this population. So a little bit more into each of these age classes. So our legal abundance, this figure is showing the blue is our estimated abundance in each year that we've done a stock assessment. And the red marker is our projection 1 year out from that previous year. So in 2019, this blue marker here is our legal abundance, and we projected out into 2020 that we would see a slight decline in the legal size abundance. When we actually went and did our stock assessment, that point estimate showed a slight increase in our legal size abundance. But as you can see in 2020, we have very large error bars. We worked really hard in 2018 and 19 to make those estimates more precise. And then COVID threw us a curveball, and due to some sampling limitations, we were not able to sample as many fish as we'd like. And that increased some of the uncertainty in our point estimate. So as a second kind of metric to evaluate the precision of this model, we do look at the legal catch per effort, which is the number of 38 to 54 inch sturgeon that are caught in the set line. And so generally, if you were to see more sturgeon in the population, you would expect to see a higher catch per effort. But that number has actually been declining in the last 2 years and is more supportive of our projected abundance than it is of our actual estimated abundance in 2020. So this doesn't support our model or modeled increase. And that says adult abundance. I apologize. That should say legal size abundance. But it does show that there is a little bit of uncertainty there, which is kind of represented by those large confidence intervals. Transitioning to our adult portion of the population, so those fish over 66 inches, we always have some uncertainty in the size of the population because these large fish are very challenging to sample. Our gear just does not do a great job of catching them, and some of them are large enough that they can straighten the set line hooks pretty easily. So what we do here is we look at this in terms of a 3-year running average. That helps to smooth out some of that uncertainty and get us a better sense of what the trends are through time with this portion of the population. So this 3-year average is already kind of smoothing out some of the uncertainty from our 2020 estimate. This desired status and conservation status that you see here comes from the Oregon Conservation Plan. They recommend over 9,250 adult-sized sturgeon for a healthy population. And what we're seeing is that in the last 2 years, we've been trending in that direction, and our point estimate is within that desired status range. So this is really good. This means that we are meeting some of our objectives to help build that adult portion of the population. That's going to be our long-term security with this population. So if we fix other issues with the population, as long as we have adults, we have potential for more recruitment and we can always rebuild the population. So this is the trend we want to see here. So our metric, our CPUE, let's double check. How is that looking? We are seeing in general the last couple of years higher catch per effort. And so, I mean, in general, you know, our total catch, this is like one fish for every 10 sets. So it's not a lot of fish that we're seeing at this size range, but that has generally been increasing over the last couple of years. So we think that this generally does support our modeled increase in the adult abundance. Now flipping to the other end of the population, our age zeros. This top figure is showing our Lower Columbia age zero catch per net. And the bottom figure is showing the Willamette River catch per net. So the first takeaway is not to compare these directly, but look within a river for trends through time. And we've seen in the past some large recruitment events in like 2009 and another little jump in 2017. But it's been fairly low through the rest of that time since 2010. The Willamette River was not sampled very much early on, and there were some increases here in 2017 through 2019. Unfortunately, this data does not exist for 2020. So this is all data that's collected by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And it's very important to us to be able to get that first look at spawning success in a given year and try and evaluate what the future of this population might look like. But they had some reduced funding and they were unable to collect that data in 2020. And it's not clear to me at this point whether they will be able to collect this data in the future or not. So unfortunately, we don't have any new 2020 data to report on for our age zero catch per net. And I don't know that we're gonna have this data going forward either. So now we know we're increasing in adults and we've seen pretty low recruitment in our age zero. So what does that look like in terms of our population composition? And so again, these desired and conservation status lines come directly from the Oregon Conservation Plan. And what they say is that they want the juvenile portion of the population to be greater than 95% of the population. That would mean that you have healthy recurring recruitment through time that's always putting new fish out there to help build up the rest of the population. Unfortunately, with declines in our age zero numbers, we are not seeing many new juveniles recruiting to our set line gear either. So this blue bar representing the juvenile portion of the population has been decreasing through time. And for 2 years now, we've been below what has been deemed the conservation status. So we are, you know, thinking about that when we're looking at our legal size abundance and the future of the fisheries, if we're not gonna have a lot of recruitment, putting more fish in to move into that slot, we might start to see declines in the legal abundance, which could impact the amount of harvestable fish we have available. Again, we harvest off a harvest rate. So as that population total abundance declines, that percentage also, the percentage is the same, but the total number that would be harvested would also decline, if that makes sense. So what's causing these potential recruitment issues? One of the things that we're tracking here is pinniped predation. This top figure is showing our pinniped mean daily abundance at Bonneville Dam. This is the data reported by the Army Corps. These red bars here are California sea lions, and the blue bars are our stellars. So it's my understanding from my conversations with the pinniped team that around 2008 is when we started removing California sea lions. And so as more Californians were being removed, more stellars moved into the area. And as stellars moved into the area, this bottom figure here is observed sturgeon predation at Bonneville Dam. That increased pretty significantly. Around 2013, though, that amount of observed sturgeon predation dropped off. It's my understanding from the pinniped team, where they've done some diet analysis, that at the in the scat samples at Bonneville and in the at Willamette Falls, sturgeon still were found in somewhere around 83% of the scat samples. So there is some predation still occurring on sturgeon. It may not be direct observed, but there's also thoughts about how else sea lions may be impacting sturgeon. We have this data on from Peter Stevens here, where he analyzed, this is the catch per net of our age zero fish versus the mean daily abundance of stellar sea lions. And they found that the stellar sea lion abundance was a significant predictor of weak white sturgeon recruitment. So whether it is still direct predation in all these areas, or even just harassment of the adults, or forcing the adult sturgeon to find suboptimal habitat for spawning, it's having some sort of impact on our recruitment success. And we're not exactly sure what that is. Fortunately, in 2020, NIMS did approve an application to allow WFW and partners to expand the program to legally remove sea lions. So I'm sure you heard a lot about that earlier. We are kind of hoping that that has an effect, but I would, you know, guess that that would probably be years before we see a change in sturgeon recruitment as a result of the change in stellar sea lion abundance. So this is kind of just my dashboard summary here. This is the summarize everything I've already told you. So our legal abundance, the point estimate increased. However, we know that there's some variability in that estimate. I didn't go into it too much, but this is still somewhat of an increase from the early like 2010 period. So we do feel like this population, like we're meeting our objectives to try and grow. Grow the population and harvest sustainably here. Our adult portion of the population has been looking pretty good. We are trending upward. We seem to be pushing more fish into that size. We're feeling pretty confident about our adult size portion of the population, though, like I said, it's a very difficult size to sample. So there may still be some variability issues there in the estimates. Our population structure, though, when it comes to the amount of juveniles we have is pretty low. We're below that conservation threshold, and we need to see more recruitment in the population in order to maintain kind of what we're doing now moving forward. Unfortunately, we don't have any new data on what recruitment looks like in 2020. And really our sea lion predation data was not yet available for 2020, but from the information we have in previous years and from our pinniped team, it does seem like the stellar sea lions are having quite an impact on sturgeon still. And, you know, so I have a red marker in here. I think a lot more work needs to happen with sea lions in regards to sturgeon. And then here for our Lower Columbia fisheries, kind of a social, I guess, type indicator here, we saw at least 12,000 angler trips in the Columbia and about 17,000 total angler trips for sturgeon fisheries in 2020. And that's without even having the estuary retention season open. So there's still a lot of interest in this fishery. you know, a lot of people, this helps maintain that connection to the resource and helps keep driving our conservation message forward. And it keeps people, I think, from hitting the oversized sturgeon too much to have some of these seasons allowed. So, you know, I think that it's still important for us to try to maintain a small fishery when it's possible, when the population is abundant enough for that to occur. So where are we going for 2021? So this figure here, this is that same estimate on the population abundance. And so what we do here is we model out, we project out what that population abundance might look like going out a few years. So the green line here is kind of our no harvest projection. You see it starts to decline a little bit even with no harvest. That's that smaller juvenile portion of the population. We're expecting that to at some point start having an effect on the number of legal size fish. And then that 3 to 5% range is what we've been trying to harvest within. So you can see that projected out a few years, what that looks like for our legal abundance. Now, because we had some uncertainty in that population abundance and because that point estimate actually increased the legal abundance, staff are recommending that we still take a more cautious approach with setting the 2021 fisheries. So this was our 2020 projected estimate. And what we're thinking now is that we're gonna actually start here in order to set that number to plan a 2021 fishery. So basically if that abundance is really higher, if it's increased, we're not gonna negatively impact them by harvesting at a lower level. If that abundance did not increase, like some of our indicators are showing, and it is closer to our projected estimate, then we're gonna be more on target here. So we're hoping to use that projected estimate as kind of a starting point and probably harvest at a very similar total quota to what we did in 2020. We shared the stock status update with our Columbia River advisor groups in January. Our sport advisors did have some conservation concerns with that juvenile portion of the population, but generally they did support another retention fishery similar to the past few years. Our commercial advisors, kind of similar story here, some conservation concerns, but they agreed with our assessment and asked for a balanced approach to that commercial harvest going into 2021. So our planned next steps are to work with ODFW to develop another short duration retention fishery, similar to 2017 through 2020, or at least what we had planned for 2020 before COVID came in, and target that low harvest rate and then that lower legal size abundance, that projected abundance, to continue building the population, but still providing some level of sustainable fishing opportunity. So that's all I've got for you today, and I'll definitely take any questions if you've got it.
Commissioner Thorburn.
Thank you, Laura. Sorry, I have questions. This is one of my favorite fish presentations of the year, and I love the fish. I a couple of questions about monitoring. You know, we continue to get the red dot when it comes to our zero age and juveniles. And at some point, that's going to, in this long-lived fish, is going to show up, it seems like, down the road. And so I'm really concerned hearing that we may not have the traditional data that we've had because of some funding issues, and would just like to put forward that this seems to be one of the most important monitoring pieces about population status. So if Oregon loses it, it seems to me we need to work with our partners and figure out some other way to continue to get that. I'm wondering if there might be proxy indicators in the legal size. I mean, that's the next place that recruitment problems are going to show up. And while we're above that nadir, it does seem like with the potential correction to this year's data that the trend is downward. And I'm wondering if that might be a proxy indicator that we're seeing problems with the zero and juvenile recruitment. So that's one thing to comment on. And then I noticed in the materials that we're not looking at bycatch by the commercial fishery. And since harvest is so carefully monitored, you know, I really agree with the approach of continuing to offer this opportunity. It's such a popular fishery, but it is, in terms of understanding the impact of harvest on the population, is the question of commercial bycatch important? And the materials you sent said we didn't have monitors this year, so we don't know anything about bycatch. If it's important, and I know most of the sturgeon caught are returned live if they're not retained by the commercial fishery, but if it's important to those harvest numbers, why not just ask the commercial fishers to report that bycatch?
So that's a good question, and I can work with our some of our other biologists who work more directly with the commercial fishermen on that. But from some of my conversations with the commercial fishermen, many of those sturgeon don't even come aboard. They kind of shake them out of the nets because they don't want to handle sturgeon in the boat if they're not allowed to harvest them. So it sounds like many of these fish get released alive before they even make it into the boat to be counted or sampled. But that's, you know, my understanding, we don't really have observers out there tracking a lot of that data. At least currently we don't.
If other commissioners have questions or comments, we do have some public comment on this issue, if we want to run through that, and then if questions arise. Okay. Nikki, what do we have?
All righty. So we'll now take public comment from attendees. Reminder, everyone receives 3 minutes. Everyone's currently muted, so if you have a question, please raise your hand. If you're on the computer, the raise hand button appears under your name. If you're on the phone, please press *9. Wait till you've been unmuted. This is your indication it's time to speak. So far, I've just got Greg King, so.
Okay, welcome, oh. Greg.
Yeah, go ahead, Greg. Oh, there's Butch, okay.
Chair Carpenter, commission, new commissioners, welcome. Welcome to this process. My name is Greg King. I'm president of the Lower Columbia River Chapter of Puget Sound Anglers, and we support a Lower Columbia estuary sturgeon fishery in the spring. I also want to let you know, Larry, is Laura Hieronymus is one of the rock stars you have at the department. She has worked with one of our board members that has property on the Lower Cowlitz to do a smelt survey on the smelt that have been coming in the Cowlitz River. So I want to commend Laura on that and reaching out to us, and we're eager to work with her in the department on smelt and sturgeon and everything else fisheries. So thank you.
That's it. We have Butch, I guess. I'm sorry, I couldn't find my button. Molly, don't laugh at me.
I'm not. I'm laughing that that's all Greg had to say.
Yeah. Yeah, 3 minutes is different. It used to be. Okay, Mr. Smith.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
All righty. Hey, thank you. And echo Greg a little bit. Welcome to Commissioner Coons and Commissioner Smith to the club here, and wish you well and luck, and you got drafted. So great. My name is Butch Smith. I'm president of the El Waco Charter Association, Port Commissioner El Waco, and a whole bunch of other things. I have fish sturgeon, probably one of the longest in the room here in the Lower River. Meaning when I say Lower River, in the estuary out of El Waco, and represent my association. And I too just want to say great things about Laura and her team, and let you know if other places in the country had this many sturgeon, they'd be doing backflips and hoorays, because this is a true great managed resource that the states of Oregon and Washington have done over the years to make sure it's continuing in a high abundance. And I'd also like to say to Mr. Tightwad Susswin there, we got to send some money down to the sturgeon program. Oregon's having issues, and I know we have issues, but we don't want, we didn't have an estuary fisheries. But for example, in 19, we had an 11 day, I believe it was 11 days. It was over 20,000 anglers just in the estuary. So this is a huge popular fisheries. And so I too support the conservation minded season. My God, we don't want sturgeon to be ESA listed, but our harvest rate is far under any ESA listed salmon that we have. So showing that the conservation that the state of Washington and Oregon have stepped up to have a short but meaningful fishery to the estuary and upriver. So I do support the staff's recommendation, and I want to thank you guys very much.
Butch, thank you for your comments. Have a nice weekend. Next, Nikki.
Next, we've got Rachel Bjork. Go ahead, Rachel.
I'm just going to be real brief. I did want to thank Laura Hieronymus for that very informative presentation. And I just did want to remind the commissioners that catch and release is not a harmless activity. A lot of fish do, in fact, die after they are caught on a hook and then released. I do understand that they do try to take care to not remove them from the water, but it still does stress out.
Are you there, Rachel?
I guess she's done. Okay, that it, Nikki?
That's all I got, yep.
Okay, any comments? Did Commissioner McIsaac, I think you had your hand up for a moment, or I can't even, you got two squares here on the screen.
Are you calling me a square kind of a guy?
No, I wasn't going there, but I want to just tell you one thing. Laura, you're feeling the love, aren't you? Oh. These guys speak very highly of you, and you should be very proud of that, because they've been around and they don't give out attagirls lightly. So good job. Well done, Laura.
Thank you very much, Chair Carpenter, and to all the commissioners for sticking around this late in the day to hear about some sturgeon. I really appreciate your time.
Appreciate your help. Okay, Don, did you have a comment, or did I misunderstand that?
Yeah, no, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to wrap this up with a motion, and if it's seconded, speak to it just very briefly. I'm looking at the staff recommendation in the summary sheet, so I'm going to move that with a little bit of a twist at the end here. So I would move that the staff work with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to develop another short-duration sport retention fishery similar to the fisheries of 2017 to 2020, with a target announcement date of March 15th.
Is this okay. A spur of the moment?
I'm sorry, who?
This is Nikki. Is this a spur of the moment motion? Because I don't have.
Well, I have a question of Don. Don, this was not a decision today. This was just a briefing and public comment. And I believe in the past number of years, we have, delegated to the directors to work it out. I'm open to whatever, but I don't know if we want to change the methodology with which we've used in recent years. Yeah, your comments?
Maybe I don't need to make a motion. I think it is appropriate for the commission to bless the staff recommendation, so to speak. There is some biological information, as Commissioner Thorburn mentioned, that can go a little bit of both ways. There's a couple of red dots on there. So let me just say without a motion then that I think that it would be good for the commission to endorse the staff recommendation that's in writing in the summary report, and to speak a little bit to when a good notice would be. And here's my rationale on all that. On the biological status, there's a little bit of a mixed bag there. We've got some red dots on the juvenile recruitment. We've got a red dot on stellar sea lion impacts and the spawning areas. But we've got a very strong situation with regard to the steady adult rebuilding trend since 2013, from red zone where it was, moving through the middle of the spectrum and now into the green zone and increasing into the green zone. And these are the adult fish. And fortunately, since they're long lived, they're going to be around for a while. And so I think that in the mix of that, particularly if we're going to get a little help from the stellar predation on the best spawning ground right there below Bonneville Dam, that justifies some sort of consideration of a fishery. The staff recommendation is a very conservative approach. They're picking a number to start with that's less. It's a very low harvest rate. This is a very popular fishery down in our area down here. And it attracts a lot of attention. And so I think there should be some sort of a fishery, a conservative one, like the recent years. There's been a question about when people even know there's a season. And that got tangled up last year in the COVID response, and we had a statewide fishery closure. But even in the years before that, there have been concerns about a late announcement of a season and people not really knowing much about it. People like to make some plans. So I know our directors are going to get together and talk about Columbia River things here before too long. North of Falcon starts about mid-March. And so I'm suggesting that we have a target date, not a specific date, but a target date of having an earlier announcement than we've had in recent years, just so people can make some plans.
Sure. Go ahead, Don. I'm sorry.
And one last thing, as long as it's not a motion, the matter of funding for the research. This is a longstanding joint state research program that is a very strong success story. So as we get into some of the, we don't usually get into the budget minutia on this kind of thing, but I would lend a lot of support to everybody keeping a close eye on this excellent program and adequately funding it.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. I see our director's screen has lit up. I will go to him, and then I see Commissioner Thorburn's hand is up. Director Sisowin.
I think Commissioner McIsaac just cleared it up with the motion is what I was getting ready to speak to. I will take the opportunity, though, to echo the praise for Laura and her team, just standout work. And I will reach out to Mr. Butch Smith and his comment directly.
Thank you, Director. Commissioner Thorburn.
Mine's sort of a wrap up of that. I just want to be very clear that I support what Commissioner McIsaac and our testifiers have brought forward, and the work that Laura has done to sustain a retention fishery. It is a really important fishery. My comments were really directed toward my concerns, noting that we've got some problem areas in terms of population status that keep recurring. It's more, my comments were directed toward the monitoring and the potential loss of a monitoring source. So it supports the question that Butch Smith put forward, the director said that he listened to direct resources toward this to ensure that we have the kind of monitoring information available so that we can sustain this fishery. Because I think it's really important to understand the population status, the age structure, and that we're not getting into trouble in order to sustain this fishery. So I support going forward with the fishery and want to make that very, very clear.
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. Yes, it is a very important fishery, and it certainly helps those downriver communities that need some help. There's no doubt about that. So I think we did the right thing. Don, thank you for your comments as well. Anyone else want to speak to this? Okay, it's been a good day. I'm going to move to adjourn for the night. It is now 4:32 on the 29th of January, 2020. We will reconvene at 0800 tomorrow morning. Thank you all. Be safe.
Thank you.